Good evening, everyone. Time being 5:30 p.m, I'd like to welcome everyone to this evening's meeting. My name is Paula Reap, Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome everyone tonight, particularly those who are watching the live stream at home via YouTube. Being 5:30 p.m, I now declare the meeting officially open. I wish to advise that Council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with Council's policy, I'll ask the General Manager to confirm that the recording has started.
Confirm, Mayor.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that we are meeting on today, pay respects to Elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reid, Deputy Mayor, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street and Councillor Wass. From our staff this evening we have the General Manager, Mr Arnold, the Director of Engineering Services, Mr Reeve, Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Smee, the Acting Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Mrs Salisbury, Manager of Finance, Mr Jones, Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore, our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. We have apologies this evening from Councillors Bastone and Councillor Grace. On page one, confirmation of minutes, the motion is that the minutes of the open session of Council meeting number 16, held on the 15th of August 2022, be confirmed as a true and accurate record. I have a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Still on page one, workshops held since the last Council meeting. Last Monday evening, we had a workshop in relation to DDA compliance for bus stops. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest? No, thank you. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. We are now on page two. There is a notice of performance improvement direction. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Fox. Seconded, Councillor Midgley. I'll now ask the General Manager to read the advice that we've been provided with. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. The letter reads, Dear Mayor, as you are aware, I have been investigating the potential breach of provisions of the Local Government Act 1993 and the Police Offences Act 1935, associated with the behaviours of Councillor David Grace at the meeting of 6 June 2022. I have recently written to Councillor Grace, advising him of the outcomes of this investigation. The behaviour of Councillor Grace at the Council meeting of 6 June 2022 was clearly unacceptable. It was aggressive, causing distress and concern for other councillors and staff at the meeting. It was also highly disruptive, leading to a break in the proceedings of the council in order to re-establish order and regain some sense of constructive control over proceedings. Councillor Grace's behaviour at this meeting, in my opinion, falls short of the statutory obligation of councillors to work individually and collectively in the best interests of the community. It also directly impacts on the obligation of the Mayor, or Deputy Mayor on this occasion, and the General Manager to maintain a safe workplace as required by the Work Health and Safety Act 2012. I believe that I have sufficient evidence to refer this issue to the Director of Public Prosecutions for prosecution for two separate offences, being Regulation 43 of the Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2015. Failure to leave a meeting when suspended, and Section 20 of the Police Offences Act 1935, misbehaviour at a public meeting. However, I note that Councillor Grace has accepted that his behaviour was improper and that the Minister for Local Government, Nick Street MP, has issued a performance improvement direction requiring, in part, that there is no repeat of this behaviour for at least 12 months. On this basis, I consider that there is no public interest in pursuing these charges at this stage. A primary objective of the offences provision of both the Local Government Act 1993 and the Police Offences Act 1935 is to discourage aggressive and disruptive behaviour in council and other public meetings. I will reconsider the public interest in pursuing these charges if there is any suggestion that this behaviour is ongoing. I appreciate Councillor Grace's apology to the Council for his behaviour following the incident on 6 June 2022 and his acknowledgement that this behaviour was not acceptable. I also recognise his extended period of highly valued service to the Kingborough community as a councillor for over 22 years. I am confident that his positive contribution over that time is and will continue to be recognised by the Kingborough community. Given the public nature of the incident of 6 June 2022, I would appreciate you tabling and reading this letter at an open meeting of council at the next appropriate opportunity. Yours sincerely, Matthew Healy, Director of Local Government. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. So the motion is that Council resolve that the letters from the Minister for Local Government and the Director of Local Government be received. All those in favour? Sorry. Yep. General Manager.
If I may, Mayor, the letter from the Director came with the request to table and read this letter. The letter from the Minister came with the request that the letter be tabled. It has been tabled.
Does anybody wish to speak on the motion? Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't want to prolong it. It's gone on long enough, but I would like to think that Councillor Grace would have been in presence when this is read, and I'm asking the General Manager whether there's anything stopping Council from re-submitting these letters for the next meeting when Councillor Grace hopefully will be here.
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question, Councillor Wass. I would need to take that on notice and seek the guidance of the Director of Local Government.
Councillor Gladright.
Sorry, it's just a minor detail, but the words up there asks for letters. Do we need to amend that?
So both have been tabled. So it's in the plural. Any further discussion? If not, I'll put the motion that Council resolve that the letters from the Minister for Local Government and the Director of Local Government be received. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. We turn now to page 6, questions without notice from the public. Do you wish to ask any questions? Thank you. For those people who are watching at home, if they did want to submit a question on notice, they can send it to via email to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Still on page 6, we did have two questions on notice that have been forwarded to us by members of the community from AJ Kingston in relation to public open space funds and an officer's response from Mr Jones, and a second question from Mr Joe Ellis in relation to various infrastructure queries for Margate and an officer's response from Mr Reeve. Turning now to page 8, questions without notice from councillors. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question is actually about the General Manager's diary. In company with the Mayor, met with Vice-Chancellor Professor Rufus Black, and I'm interested to know perhaps some more about the discussion with the Vice-Chancellor and how it might impact Kingborough residents. Thanks.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question, Councillor Cordova. The meeting was very much a catch-up, but also gave the Vice-Chancellor the opportunity to provide both the Mayor and myself with some facts about the student enrolments, the types of courses that were being undertaken, and, of course, some information regarding the proposed UTAS relocation from Sandy Bay into Hobart. We were given the opportunity to ask questions in that regard. Vice-Chancellor was keen to make the point that regardless of where the campus was located, many of the students, many of whom live in Kimbra, would require public transport to access the campus.
Thank you. And a second question, a broad one about Margate. There's been a lot of discussion around the difficulty in crossing the Channel Highway as well as the development of Margate in general, issues around concern for safety and pedestrian active transport. Basically, there's a general feeling that Margate needs some attention. And so my question is really about master planning in Margate and what are the options that are on the table for a Margate master plan and making Margate a cleaner, greener, more walkable, friendly, growing business district. Thank you.
Ms. Tyler Moore and then Mr. Reeve. They're very enthusiastically all putting their lights on.
Through you, Mayor, it's a valid question about Margate and a structure plan or a development plan. It's something we would typically do through strategic planning in the planning department. It is on our list of things to get done. The limitation we have is resourcing. We don't have the staff to do it all the time to do it. We're focusing on getting the planning scheme done at the moment, and we also want to do the Kingston structure plan. So if there was availability of resource, we would certainly invest it in doing that. We would work with the engineering services as well with respect to some of the public assets that are involved in that, as well as the state government agencies such as Metro.
Mr. Reeve, I think we'd be pretty interested in talking about a pedestrian crossing across the Channel Highway.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. So just to add to that point there, we actually have got an allocation in the tail end of our five-year capital works plan for master planning for Margate. The reason being it's on the capital works is that we envisage there'd probably be some capital works that would actually come out of that process. So that would probably cover off on what Ms. Tyler Moore actually mentioned. In terms of a pedestrian crossing, yes, it's come up a number of times in Margate, and it is particularly difficult to cross that section of the Channel Highway, particularly in the peak periods, in the morning periods, and the afternoon periods as well. So it is something that we have looked at before. We had an option to actually put at least one additional crossing in, which was near the post office area, which was unsuccessful at the time. I've asked that to be reviewed again in terms of having the discussion with the Department of State Growth in particular, bearing in mind it's a state growth road, about whether we could actually look at getting a better pedestrian facility in that area.
Thank you, Mr. Reeve. Mr. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. And just a final question on Margate is in relation to time frame and funding. So I note that on the tail end of the five-year capital works plan is that master planning piece. Is it a question for council to be able to move that forward and get it done sooner than 5 years? So this relates to time frame and funding. Is there the second component of that is funding available outside of council, for example, what we managed to achieve with the Hobart City deal for Kingston, are there pools of funding that might be available for Margate if we move forward the capital works funding?
Mr. Reeve.
Really, Mayor, I don't know that there'd be pools outside of our normal capital works, but there's certainly nothing precluding council looking at their five-year plan and where projects are actually orientated in their five-year plan when they go to relook at next year's projects. So we can certainly take those comments on board as to whether or not council has the appetite to bring that particular project closer.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley, and then I have Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a few questions tonight. The first one relates to rubbish. So what can we do to ensure that builders contain their rubbish so it doesn't end up in local waterways, e.g. this was a matter in Spring Farm for Whitewater Creek and most recently Home Avenue for a nearby creek? I'm wondering, can we strengthen a bylaw or what else could we do?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor. We do have planning permit conditions that relate to it loosely. It would probably be dealt with better under a bylaw. I'm not
involved in the writing of Kimbra bylaws. That's a different team, but certainly there are examples of councils that have bylaws specifically about that, where they might have requirements about waste collection and waste removal, but more particularly about proper fenced and roofed fenced capture for their waste to try and avoid it doing that. The benefit of having a bylaw is that it's much easier to implement and fine or warn and do those sorts of things with offenders than it is to try and trace it through the planning stream. So it is something that could be looked at potentially, but I'm not the expert of Kimbra bylaws or what the content of them would be. I think we'd probably need to look at the detail of what's required to go into that.
Thank you. Ms. Tullamore. Councillor Midgley, did you have another question?
Sorry, just on that, so can there be another option soon, considering there is a lot of development and we have a recent styrofoam going into waterways? Do we just have to have compliance? Or
Mr. Smee can give us some assistance with that, if someone turns their lights. Thank you.
Through you, Mayor, we do indeed have provisions within our bylaws requiring builders to contain any rubbish on site, and that comes with penalties. So it probably is more a matter of enforcement rather than the mechanism to do it, because we do have that contained within our bylaw. But as with a lot of things, enforcement and proving where the rubbish has come from is the difficulty.
Thank you. With the development most likely to be built in Blackmans Bay near Bayview, is Council aware of the possible future traffic implications this will have on the private road access to Bayview Shopping Centre, and what plans are in place to mitigate the increase in traffic and possible implications this might cause?
Mr. Reeve? No? Ms. Tullamore? Anybody? Anybody? No? General Manager?
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Midgley, it's an interesting question, because the DA for the parcel of land that currently has a Knight Frank expression of interest board on it was approved by council in early 2000, back about around 2008 from memory. And I suspect that without looking at the file, the traffic assessment at that time would probably be substantially different to any traffic assessment that would be undertaken should a similar application be lodged in 2022. I'm not sure that I can answer your question, except to say that the current owners of the land have an existing DA that has met the planning requirements of substantial commencement. There is a concrete slab near the daycare centre that has ticked off that checklist, and I'm not sure I can add much more.
Caught in the substantial commencement loop again.
And just a further question on that, because it is a private road, are there then more complications in regards to what council can do to perhaps look at putting the yellow lines down there so people don't park on the road and things like that, or can we make changes to the road to make it safer? Because it already is becoming a congestion and some unsafe things are happening.
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, we've certainly had discussions with the various different properties down there that have an interest over that section of road on a number of different things. So we actually currently do have a maintenance agreement with the tenants, so that's just the general maintenance of the road. But we've also had some discussions in the past in terms of parking. You're probably aware a lot of people do park along that side of the road. So that's something we could certainly pursue if there was some more intense development happening in that area there. And in fact, it would be something we'd want to pursue as well. So, yes, there is some avenue to have those discussions with the various landowners who have an interest over that section of road.
Thank you. A question in regards to the Margate to Huntingfield feasibility study, off-road shared path. I note that it is sitting on the Minister's desk, and I'm wondering at all if we have any knowledge as to when it might be release for community consultation?
We don't at this stage. I do have a meeting with Minister Ferguson in about a fortnight's time, and that's certainly top of our agenda to ask what the hold-up is. Councillor Westwood I had next, and then Councillor Gladright.
Thank you, Mayor. Two questions from me. I've had some complaints about the removal of vegetation in Blackmans Bay at Maryknoll. Just wondering if we could have an update on whether staff have investigated these complaints.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the matter has been investigated. I don't have at hand what the outcome of that was. I did have a meeting with the team on Wednesday, so I'd know better and I can provide any advice of that. But yes, it has been investigated.
Thank you. A question through you, Mayor, to the General Manager. Is there any update on the EBA negotiations that the General Manager has undertaken recently with staff?
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question, Councillor Westwood. It's very timely. The voting closed at 5 p.m. today. Just before the council meeting commenced, I was advised that of the eligible staff, 93% voted. 120 voted yes, 44 voted no, and 12 abstained. So the staff have voted to accept the EA, and we will undertake in the next day or two to get the appropriate paperwork off to Fair Work to complete the matter.
Thank you. Councillor Gladright.
Thank you. I've got a question for the General Manager through you, Mayor. It's just in relation to the attendance of the Greater Hobart Homelessness Alliance Forum. I was just wondering if there was any information that came out of that forum that relates to how council can be involved positively in that issue, towards that issue.
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Gladright, there were a number of matters discussed at that Homeless Alliance Forum. I think the best thing to come out of it, from my point of view, was the networking opportunities. We had both the Federal Minister for Housing and the State Minister for Housing give short presentations. Sitting on my table was the CEO of Hobart City Missions. We are catching up in the next week or so to discuss potential for council to work with Hobart City Missions. My colleague, Mr. Smee, has a meeting this week with Jan Chandler, the CEO of the Hobart Women's Shelter, and we're looking at all possible avenues that we can to address this this blight on society, whereby members of our community that are not quite so well off find themselves homeless, often through no fault of their own.
Thank you. And just to follow on from that, if I may please, Mayor, will anything that comes out of those meetings be reported back to council? Will we find out about what's proposed?
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, indeed, Councillor Gladright. My best guess is that in any circumstances, it's highly probable that the ultimate decision would need to be made in this chamber by the elected representatives. So, yes, we will certainly report back should a decision be required, and we will advise councillors in the meantime of any progress.
Thank you. So if I can just add to that, I think I'd mentioned previously that when the Greater Hobart Mayors had a presentation from the Hobart Women's Shelter, one of the things that they made very clear is that they have funding to construct emergency accommodation, because they're turning away one in three women who are requiring help, particularly fleeing domestic violence situations, quite often with children, but they have a lack of land that is suitable, and we have previously identified, that prompted me to come back and ask if we could identify some land. They do have some criteria for the land that they require. It has to be within a reasonable proximity to the main Kingston CBD so that public transport, schools, services are accessible for somebody who may not have their own transport, but I do believe that we've identified a couple of parcels of land that could work very well, and we also did identify some state government land that could also be useful. So that's what we're pursuing with the women's shelter at the moment, and I actually also did identify a privately owned facility that might be suitable as well, which wouldn't involve them having to construct much. So I think there are some opportunities. The feedback that I received, I did communicate with the CEO of the women's shelter, and she did say that she was really pleased the way that we had sort of proactively gone about searching for land, and that she'd also received a very good response from Glenorchy City Council as well. So hopefully we can find the right parcel of land. Councillor Midgley, did you have another question?
I do. Councillor Gladewright just prompted me on something I heard on the radio about the Hobart City Mission night space. And thank you, Mayor and General Manager, for being active voices in this space as well. So with the Hobart City Mission night space, they identified that the model has been working extremely well, and they would be looking at other areas to expand that. So that, I guess, could be part of that conversation that staff or the General Manager yourself can have with Hobart City Mission. Is that something along those lines that could be possible for Kingborough?
General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Midgley. We'll certainly add that to the agenda. Yes.
Any further questions? If not, we'll continue through. Still on page 8, questions on notice from councillors. There were no questions on notice from councillors. So the open session of council now adjourns at 5:57 p.m. and the planning authority commences at 5:57 p.m. So moving to page 9, it's DA 2022/18, development application for subdivision, boundary adjustment, no additional lots created at 149 Beach Road and 54 and 56 Esplanade, Margate, with a recommendation for refusal on page 17. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Moved, Councillor Street. Seconded, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. This is an application before us that has been recommended for refusal. I intend to keep my comments very brief for the simple reason that I do not believe, in line with the staff's advice, that there was any possible way that we could ever have approved this development application on the basis that it does not meet the minimum lot size standards for the low-density residential zone, and there is no performance criteria against which to assess a development application that does not meet that criteria. On that basis alone, the application must fail, and I thank staff for their advice in that respect.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Further contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I just really have a question about, so I guess to frame this up, what we're looking at is the low density residential, and it doesn't comply with the local area objectives, doesn't comply with the proposed boundary adjustment permit due to the requirements of clause 9.3.1b, which reads, quote, there is only minor change to the relative size, shape and orientation of the existing lots, and the proposed variation can't be supported pursuant to that performance criterion of the zone because the proposal doesn't satisfy the minimum lot size stipulated in the zone table 12.1, and the acceptable solution there is 2,500 square metres. My question really is about, is the zoning of this particular area, low density residential, is that zoning outdated? And the reason I ask that question is I'm basically trying to figure out why an area like that at the foreshore of Margate is still low density when it's so close to shops and services. So it does make sense to me that areas are low density residential because there are no shops and services, so you don't really want people selling off their backyard to subdivide to build units and things like that. But in Margate, where you are closer to services and shops, why is the zoning the way it is in this particular area?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, it's going to sound harsh. The application's not for a rezoning, so we can't consider the rezoning and we can't make a decision outside what the provisions of the planning scheme are. So for this particular application, you only have the provisions that are before you to make the decision. The broader question about the zoning of the site, it's been zoned that way for some time, and it had to do with lack of reticulated sewage because you needed to provide on-site wastewater treatment on those sites, so they need to be large enough to do that. As we move to the new planning scheme, the Tasmanian planning scheme, I can't recall off the top of my head whether this one is to be rezoned, but there are areas of Margate that we intend to upzone, meaning that they will go to more appropriate ones. And the considerations for rezoning are not just whether they're close to shops, but it also includes what the neighbourhood character is, the prevailing character and suitability of the area, and if there's other assets that should be considered, whether that's proximity to the coast, protecting vegetation, or lack of reticulated services. So there's a number of elements that must be considered for rezoning, and we can do that as part of the Tasmanian planning scheme, but for this application we just have to deal with what the provisions are.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor, I think that is a comprehensive answer that we have to work with what we're given in this circumstance. However, in researching this particular motion, you know, I looked at, or this officer's report rather, I looked at the Google Street View of the Esplanade and Beach Road, and it's like travelling back in time. You know, the changes that you can see in Margate on the waterfront have been really sizeable, and I understand the issue about the reticulated water systems, but I do feel like this is one of those areas that does need to be re-looked at. But for the reasons outlined by the mover of the motion, I will be accepting the officer's recommendation on this occasion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Any further contributions? Councillor Street, did you want to sum up?
Look, only to say that Councillor Cordova is quite right, and it was probably remiss of me not to give the common spiel that we have to assess the application against the planning scheme as it is, not as we wish it to be. And I certainly hear what he's saying about higher density zoning in the area, and I would support him on that also.
Thank you, and thank you to the person who applauded from outside. Endorsement of your summing up there. I will put the motion then. It's as printed on page 17. It was moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? A division is required. All those in favour, please show your hands. Is Councillors Cordova, Midgley, Gladewright, Fox, Street, Westwood and Reet. Those against? Is Councillor Wass. The motion is carried. We move now to page 22, DA 2021-354, development application for 9 multiple dwellings, one existing and 2 previously approved, at 16 Groningen Road, Kingston, with a recommendation on page 38. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I have a mover, apart from the bloke outside. Mover, Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Gladewright. Councillor Fox.
I didn't expect to be the mover, but I've looked at the development and the drawings, and it seems like a reasonable thing to be agreeing to. I can't see any reason why not. It's very close to buses and easy access to the town. There are no reasons given by staff for not agreeing to this, and so I'd recommend the motion for approval. Thank you.
Thank you. Further speakers? Councillor Gladewright and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. This is, I find, one of the more challenging aspects of being a councillor, is sitting on this planning authority when we kind of have to approve developments that we don't necessarily think a good idea, especially when we receive submissions from the community and they have really valid concerns about their neighbourhood. And in this instance, I have received an email to that effect. It's really, really challenging. I feel like you know, you get elected to council to represent the community, and then in this instance you really can't. So I completely agree that the expert planners have gone through all of the provisions in the planning scheme, and this development will meet all those. So this is one of those cases when I'm forced to kind of say yes, but it's not a happy one.
Thank you. Councillor Midgley, and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I also echo sentiments from Councillor Gladwright, and we also need housing as well, and this is what it will provide as well, and it is within the zoning to do this development. The concern again comes around traffic. I mean, come to the day when we all have one car and e-bikes and lots of footpaths to walk on and frequent buses and minibuses, and we'll only need one car. That time hopefully is approaching. But in this instance, Groningen Road already, I know that spot when it's a park and ride location for me is that you often already have to turn to, you know, move to one side of the road to allow the car because there are the parked cars on either side of the road. And there is definitely, if you go down there in the peak hours, probably not as much so more with the park and ride, but it definitely is happening. What are we going to do about this for the future in regards to this development, noting that there was a response representation from a resident on page 35, the traffic impacts and parking, noting how many car parking spaces there are for the units, noting that people have one to two cars, probably average, and that there will be overflow on the road. Is there anything we can do about that?
Ms. Tallamore.
Through you, Mayor, the parking requirements of the planning scheme, which are consistent across all the interim planning schemes in Tasmania, have been satisfied in this application, so they've provided the parking required for each dwelling plus the visitor spaces. So there's no, you can't ask for parking in addition to that or above that.
Thank you. I guess in regards to future traffic implications on the road, we'll just have to keep monitoring that and see if there is any further implications because of the extra cars on this road and perhaps the increase of maybe future developments in this area as well. We'll just have to keep an eye on that, I guess.
Ms. Tallamore, nothing further?
No. I was just going to add that would be our engineering services certainly would have the ability to monitor that and have regard to traffic congestion and traffic counts and the like. They would choose to undertake that if they see it necessary.
Thank you. And this development of the nine dwellings doesn't trigger any public open space contribution or any footpath kind of construction. Am I correct in that?
Ms. Tallamore.
Through you, Mayor, no, public open space contributions can only be obtained through a subdivision, not through multi-unit developments or strata applications, although we do have, we are advocating that they should be in the future.
I had Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. The site already has one unit plus two more currently under construction, so I was, it was interesting to see because you can already see the CAD renders online. For those two that are currently under construction, they're kind of already on realestate.com. And the local area objectives here say that the ageing population should be well accommodated in Kingston and that multi-unit housing is to be directed towards areas that are relatively close to central Kingston or other significant businesses or commercial precincts. And it should be noted, I think, that whilst this is only a three-minute drive away from supermarkets and amenities like that, it still is about a 20-minute walk, which I think behoves us as a council to make sure that our active transport linkages are improved to make sure it's safe and easy and enjoyable to avail ourselves of something other than a car to get to where we need to go. But one of my concerns, I guess, is around private open space and making sure that people have access to trees and light and vegetation and things that improve our health and well-being. And I do have a few questions around this. The recommendation clause 4A on page 39 of the agenda says, planting within the open space and common areas for units 4 to 9, and then it says in brackets, additional landscaping on other parts of the site are welcomed, end quote. My question is, what is meant by additional plantings are welcomed? Does this mean, as I suspect, that this condition would be largely unenforceable? And further to that, for what reason was landscaping the rest of the site not included as an enforceable condition? So to make my point more clear, it's all very well to say it would be nice if you put solar panels on it and bike parking, but unless you actually make it an enforceable condition, it may not happen. So why wasn't that an enforceable condition?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the reason it's written that way, so they are required to do the new units that this application proposes, because the application doesn't propose the existing dwelling nor the other two dwellings that were issued under a different planning permit. So there were requirements in those for the landscaping of those dwellings. I'm just trying to find the part. Already there, so we're just saying that should they want to change the theme now that they've gone to 9 units, that they can enhance the other landscaping. But it, yes, it is enforceable, the landscaping around units 4 to 9.
Okay, thank you. So it is enforceable. The new units that are being constructed, that is enforceable. And I really hoped that our council is very proactive when it comes to that, because it improves our health and well-being to have nice areas of greenery. My question now is about bushfire, and the bushfire, the development has a 7-metre bushfire buffer from the northern boundary and a 12-metre bushfire buffer from the northwest boundary in line with Unit 4 towards the northern boundary. I'm looking at page 23 now. More broadly, the question of bushfire mitigation, are those buffers enough? And I realise that there's a kind of a large area, vegetated area, to the north of the boundary of this property. What's to be done about bushfire, and is the recommended BAL of 29, is that sufficient or should it have been higher?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, the BAL assessment and the recommendations of the setbacks are provided by a bushfire practitioner. We need to accept their recommendation on that. Obviously, if you find cause for real concern that there's an error, we raise that matter. And can raise it with the TFS, but we were comfortable with this particular one, and they found it suitable that it could be BAL 29. It's important to note that the vegetation management and that setback means that it's wholly contained within the site, because as per council policy, we don't generally allow a reliance on council land or other people's land to achieve their bushfire requirements, because the onus is too great and the risk is too great. So they have achieved it on their site, and it's left those large areas of setbacks.
Thank you. A final point that I'll raise is to the issue of stormwater, and the recommendation clause 7B number 1 on page 40 of the agenda says, and I quote, layout details a new 225mm diameter stormwater connection and manhole for the council stormwater main, and then, end quote, and then after all of that's what I think is really good stuff about water-sensitive urban design, at 7B2, this is still on page 40, it says, quote, a reticulated stormwater system sized to accommodate at least the estimated 5% AEP, end quote. So in the old money, as I often talk about it, although I shouldn't, I think of a 5% AEP as a once-in-20-year flood event. Meanwhile, in our own Kingborough stormwater system management plan on page 12, it says that approximately 53% of all Kingborough stormwater pipes have less than 5% AEP capacity, as in half of our stormwater drains won't withstand a once-in-20-year flood event. So my question is, with relation to this proposal, why are we aiming for just 5% AEP? Why are we building stormwater drains that will only withstand a once-in-20-year flood event when we know about the increasing frequency and severity of storm events and extreme rainfall events? Why aren't we compulsorily requiring proposals to have a 1% AEP to withstand a once-in-100-year event rather than a once-in-20-year event?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, I'm not a qualified engineer. I've obviously dealt with these applications a lot. The recommendations that come from our development engineers and through our engineering services had that recommendation, and it also follows the requirements of the planning scheme. There are reasons why pipes aren't over-engineered and too large, but perhaps the Director of Engineering Services may be able to provide a more engineering response for you because I don't have it available, but certainly the recommendation does go through development engineering and the requirements of the planning scheme.
Mr. Reid.
Through you, Mayor. Yeah, look, it's a fairly standard thing to have as in the old lingos, you know, a 1 in 20 year protection for your stormwater. But you will notice just below that there it talks about having the 1% AEP protection for the overland flow paths, which is also very common as well. So making sure that you have your reticulated system, but you have your overland flow paths to actually cater for the additional on top. So we do try and achieve that where we can in most locations, and so that's the advice we would give back for any planning applications that come in.
Thank you. A final point about stormwater is that with this proposal, it does meet the planning scheme, and I, whilst I do have great sympathy for the representatives who made very authentic arguments for why they're concerned, I do think that this is the type of development that we'll see more and more of, particularly in our urban centres as we're trying to get higher density, in part to solve the housing crisis, but also to give a greater diversity of housing stock available. But my real fear is that as developments like these take place throughout these areas, are we condemning future councils to clean up damaged infrastructure because we didn't make developers pay their fair share to improve community resilience in their developments by making infrastructure such as stormwater fit for purpose in a changing climate? Now, I've heard tonight that we can't really do anything about it. These are standard things that the engineers say is appropriate, and these are part of the planning scheme, and I acknowledge that. But I think more broadly that we need to be making sure our communities are resilient by putting in the type of infrastructure that is actually fit for purpose in the face of more frequent and severe weather events. So having said all that, I'm pleased to see that the tree retention matters were covered, I thought, appropriately in this, and also the noise mitigation measures and the fact that there's conditions in there that are enforceable to make sure that those noise mitigation measures are kept for the life of the development. Having said all that, the stormwater issue, the bushfire issue, I do think that this is an appropriate development and I do support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Next up, Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I echo the sentiments of my colleagues in terms of receiving correspondence from residents in that area expressing concerns around a number of things. Some of those things I think have been adequately addressed as part of the 21 conditions that are attached to the recommended approval of the development application. Some of them sit outside the planning scheme in relation to traffic flow, safety issues, congestion on Groningen Road, and I do acknowledge that potentially approval of this development application will result in some traffic impacts for those local residents. I guess that's something that council might need to address going forwards, but in terms of complying with the planning scheme, I'm comfortable that the advice of the planners is correct in this instance, and I support the approval.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Are there any further contributions? Councillor Walsh.
Thank you, Mayor. I support the recommendation, although there are a number of issues that residents have raised that I think we need to take on notice. However, infill and high-density housing is crucial for Kingston going forward, and that's why I support it. The recommendation also has, in relation to the requirements of the Department of State Growth, and these I totally agree with, I don't disagree, that the windows will be double glazed prior to occupation and ongoing, and also in relation to the sound barriers. But the sound barriers have got to be maintained forever and a day. To whose standard does the sound barrier have to be maintained? Who pays to continue the sound barrier to be of suitable requirements? How is it enforced? And what triggers a review or investigation to the sound barrier?
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, the requirements of the sound barrier and its qualities must be in accordance with the recommendations in the design that will be approved and stipulated in the condition that it's to the DSG standards. The cost of maintaining it will be the residents. So if they have a body corporate, they will need to work out how they pay for that, but it's not council's cost or the neighbour's cost. And how we would find out if there was an error with it, we would rely on the residents to raise any concerns about non-compliance with that. We wouldn't. We don't have the resources to go out and go testing it every other year or every few years. We would rely on the residents to do so. And if it was found to be non-compliant because parts of it had failed or fallen down or someone had removed it, it would be an ongoing requirement in this Part 5 agreement to make sure that that does be maintained.
Now, can I read into that, Mayor, that with the pending arrival of EVs and lack of noise, that sound barrier could, in fact, hopefully, be redundant?
I think you're very optimistic about the majority of residents changing to electric vehicles in the medium term, at least, if not the long term, given their lack of availability, but hopefully, ultimately, yes.
I am optimistic.
Good, I'm glad to hear it.
And I'd like to think that the take-up rate will be sought after.
Yeah.
There's more and more coming into Australia. The prices are getting cheaper.
Mm.
But I'd just like to know that in future, if there is very limited traffic noise, that that could be redundant and therefore removed.
Ms. Tullamore.
Through you, Mayor, yes, in the event that that was to occur, because it's obviously not just engines, it's actually the tracking of tyres on the asphalt as well. But if it were to occur and was no longer necessary, they could make an application to amend the planning permit and remove the Part 5 agreement and remove the condition from the planning permit. However, I dare say that it's probably cheaper and easier to just leave the fence there.
Sorry, Mayor, I didn't turn my mic on.
No.
Just saying let it fall down of its own accord in that case.
Don't know that that's what Ms. Tullamore was getting at.
No. Hopefully it will be built soundly and it will be fine.
Are there any further contributions? Councillor Fox, did you want to sum up? No? If not, I'll put the recommendation. It's as printed on page 38. It was moved by Councillor Fox. Seconded by Councillor Gladright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. The Planning Authority of now adjourns at 6:22pm and the open session of Council recommences at 6:22pm. Moving now to page 85, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned. And at the time the agenda was compiled, there were no petitions that had been received. Still on page 85, Kingborough Community Awards 2023 Selection Committee with a recommendation on page 86. So the recommendation is that Council appoint three councillors to assist the Deputy Mayor in the assessment of candidates for the 2023 Kingborough Community Awards with the selection to occur in October. So I might begin by just asking if there are any nominations. This will take place during this term of Council because applications close on the 3rd of October, so if you're not recontesting, don't let that hold you back. Councillor Midgley, that you'd like to nominate? Councillor Westwood is a given. Who else? Councillor Gladright and Councillor Wass. Are there any further ones? Okay, all right, so that was easy. Thank you very much. Don't have to have an election. So I need somebody to move that councillors. Councillor Westwood is going to move it. And everyone's got their hands up. Councillor Fox, I saw next. Councillor Westwood moved, Councillor Fox seconded. And it is that council appoint councillors Wass, Midgley, and Gladright to assist the Deputy Mayor in the assessment of candidates for the 2023 Kingborough Community Awards with the selection to occur in October. All those in favour? Against?
Sorry,
did you want to speak?
Ask a question about any of that, or we've passed that now?
We just passed it. Sorry, you didn't have your light on, so I... thank you very much for those nominations. Carried. Okay. Page 87, smoke-free area declaration, Kingston Park, public open space, stage 1 and 2, with a recommendation on page 91. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved, Councillor Westwood, seconded. Councillor Midgley, oh, she's doing the begging, with her mouth going, pick me, pick me. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. We have before us a report which seeks council approval to declare stage 1 and 2 of the Kingston Park public open space a smoke-free area in accordance with the Public Health Act 1997. As by way of background, a motion was carried at the 13th of November 2017 council meeting that council in principle endorsed council-owned land within Kingston Park as smoke-free. Certainly during my 4 years on council, we have been consistent with that motion, and I fully support stages 1 and 2 of Kingston Park public open space being smoke-free.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. Further speakers, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions. The first one is about, as people will be aware, I moved for the Kingborough Sports Precinct to be to become smoke-free, and that was endorsed by Council some time ago, I think November 2020. And I note in this report that originally the motion was carried at the Council meeting on the 13th of November 2017, and now here we are some 5 years later dealing with it. My question is, firstly, why wasn't the Kingborough Sports Precinct included in this nomination? And I think I know the answer, but it's a question.
Mrs. Salisbury.
Through you, Mayor. I might have to take that question on notice. I'm sorry, Councillor Cordova. I know that work has progressed in terms of planning the approach to the Kingborough Sports Centre, and I don't know whether Mr. Smee can provide any further information on that.
No.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm sorry, Mayor, we'll have to provide a response to that after the meeting.
That's okay, thank you. And I won't bury the lead to say that I am supporting this, and I think it's a good move, but I'm trying to tease out why it does take 5 years from the point of in-principle support, in-principle endorsement, to final approval, particularly if it relies on just self-enforcement, as I read in this report. I understand that it could take time to make a smoke-free declaration and to implement it if you have to deal with signage and enforcement and human resource planning to see who's going to patrol the area and education campaigns and things like that. But what I read from this report, and as I'm to take from the declaration of the Kingborough Sports Precinct when that happens, is that it's largely relying on self-enforcement anyway. So then when I read about the advertising, it does say that council does have to advertise it, but there's no prescription about what specific advertising is required. What I'm trying to get to is that I would like to see the Kingborough Sports Precinct smoke-free, and I don't think it should take 5 years. And similarly, I think with this, whilst I welcome it now, I do note that it's taken 5 years. I think we could probably do it faster simply by waving our council wand and saying, I now decree this area smoke-free, and consider that to be advertised. Is there any feedback on why it takes so long to get to the point we're at?
If there is a magic council wand, it's not one that I've discovered in the last 15 months, so maybe I didn't get in the handover from the former mayor. Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, the reason the Kingston Park one has taken time is because we need to define the area, and obviously the area has been under development, so staff have held off until we had a definitive area and maps, because they all form part of the process. So definitely with the sports precinct being a already defined area, that process should take considerably less time than what Kingston Park has. But that's been the reason for the delay in Kingston Park, in that we simply haven't known what area public open space stage 2 is going to take until we get to the point where we've nearly fully developed it.
Thank you, and I do appreciate that in the instance of the sports precinct there have been other issues that have caused delays there. Another question perhaps to take on notice is, wouldn't we have saved money, no, I'll ask it now, wouldn't we have saved money by doing the sports precinct at the same time? That's my question.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, there may be some small economies of scale in relation to the advertising, but my understanding of the process is they do need to be considered separately. I don't think there is an opportunity to do a bulk advertising of a number of different areas. They need to be considered each on their own merit.
Okay, thank you. Final question, and then I'll conclude my remarks. Does this include vaping?
It would depend on the definition under the Act, Tobacco Control Act, I would have thought, Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, yes, you are correct, and I believe it does include vaping.
Thank you. I do appreciate that there's a number of issues that sometimes slow down these declarations, and I also recognise, as I predicted, the issue of mapping what is a non-defined area. That makes perfect sense why there have been some delays, and I'm really pleased to see that this will move forward. I used to work for the Heart Foundation, and it's very clear the evidence is in that secondhand smoke is a big problem and people should not be involuntarily exposed to it. What you do on your private property, I think, is absolutely up to you, and in so many other areas of life, I think, you know, we shouldn't get in people's way when we don't have to, but when it comes to areas like playgrounds and public spaces, civic buildings, I think it stands to reason that we should have a health in all policies approach, and that includes these kinds of declarations. So I just wanted to conclude my remarks by thanking both the author and the authoriser, and I really look forward to the implementation of this and also the Kingborough Sports Precinct in due course. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Great questions, and echo, and I'm sure we all do, and we've all have such a new age for our children who very rarely see anybody smoking, very different to probably how we grew up having parents smoke in the cars. So it is so fantastic we have moved forward, and great that we can continue to make more smoke-free areas, especially around playgrounds. And just to note, the Public Health Act does state that smoking includes herbal or e-cigarettes, vaping, as well as tobacco.
Thank you. Councillor Fox. And then I've got a couple of questions.
Just a bit of a historical note. And when I first got elected in around 88, we had a Dr. Nigel Abbott, who was former Minister for Health, and he and I put a motion to council, which was carried unanimously, that all council land be declared and facilities be declared smoke-free. Mm. That's 34 and a half years ago, and we're still trying to get areas of land smoke-free. At that time, there were ashtrays in front of every councillor, except mine, when they were smoking at the
really?
Council table.
Wow.
But they still unanimously approved that we make all council facilities and land smoke-free. Just a bit of history. Thank you.
Right. Wow. Thank you. That's interesting. I actually do remember when you could smoke on planes and you could have smoking and non-smoking seats, which made no sense whatsoever. Thank you. I just had a couple of questions just in relation to the boundary as shown on page 88. Is it the intention that it stops? I'm looking at the northern part of the boundary, so closest to the top of the picture. There sort of just seems to be in the middle of the path, which is that we're just currently upgrading that white water track. It just kind of stops. How are people going to know where that boundary kind of is? Can you see what I'm talking about? General Manager's nodding. How are people going to know that that's the line? Is there actually going to be a line on the ground? It's not an obvious. It's not an obvious part of the track. And I guess the second part of the question is, as well as signage, which I assume when we're talking about signage, we're talking about traditional signs that are on signposts around. Would it be appropriate to have a stencil that's actually on the track, which has got the a spray paint of the cigarette with a cross through it, because when people are out walking, they're generally looking down, and we were going to do something similar on the Whitewater track with showing that dogs have to be on leads. I just wonder if this would be appropriate as well. Mr. Smee?
Mayor, the boundary issue, we obviously had to define what is Kingston Park. So at that junction where the track comes down from Kingston Park to what is the commuter trail that then leads out to the Whitewater Creek track, was seen as the logical point. In terms of how do people know that you are now entering a smoke-free zone, signage would be the obvious way to designate that. And I think stencil signage would be an appropriate form of signage to do that.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Councillor... Oh, just for my remarks, I'm pleased to see this. I do hope that we can do the sports centre consultation and declaration a lot faster. I suspect when we're talking about the sports precinct, are we also actually talking about not just our facilities but further afield for those, say, like the Model Car Club that is on our leased land? Just... That would be interesting.
Yes, Mayor, it's the entire precinct as defined by the title. So it includes all of the 33 users within that precinct, the men's shared community gardens, all of the sporting clubs, etc. So some of them are on leasehold, some of them are on a user agreement, and some of them are ours. But the intention is it includes the lot.
So that is a far more complicated process, but hopefully one that we can, given that we have to consult with so many stakeholders there, hopefully one that we can do within the next couple of years at the most. Councillor Westwood, did you want to sum up? Oh, sorry, Councillor Wass, I didn't see your light.
That's all right, Mayor. I support, obviously, the recommendation. The thing that you just raised, Mayor, has got me wondering, and whether we can have a discussion as a Council's briefing and for next council term looking at making all of Kingston Park smoke free in the area that we have, which would incorporate those tracks, and whether we should even look further to all tracks that go to it. It's something that a number of us over many years have tried to get. We haven't had wholehearted support. But I think in this day and age, which was raised before, that the culture of the people are different. People are learning that smoking can be, offensive at the moment and certainly carcinogenic in the long term. And I think we ought to be looking at it and setting that forward. So my question there simply is, Mayor, can we have a workshop and or a discussion in the next council year?
Certainly. Yep. Thank you. We'll note that. Okay. So having said that, I'm going to put the recommendation as printed on the screen, which was moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Turning now to page 94, transfer of freehold title from Crown to Council for Snug, Oval and Memorial Hall and acquisition of a foreshore lease or licence, with a recommendation on page 96. Do I have a mover or a second? And a seconder, please. Wouldn't even be able to sell a house tonight.
Yeah, well,
Councillor
so
Cordova.
Thank you.
And seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I think this is a good proposal, and basically the what we're looking at here is the land containing the Snug Oval, the adjoining Memorial Hall. They're Crown-owned properties that have been leased to Kingborough Council for many years. In the case of the Memorial Hall, it's a 99-year Crown lease, and that expires in 2049. And the Oval Precinct is a 10-year Crown lease. And essentially, the notion here is to transfer it to Council. And we've undertaken as a council already a number of improvements, which will be obvious to all those who frequent that area. And I was very pleased the other day to go down to the Electricana event. So I'll just take a moment to say what an excellent electric vehicle show that was. Net Zero Channel did a great job of utilising that area to show off the wonders of electric cars, which I'm sure Councillor Wass will be very pleased about. The Memorial Hall is basically the improvements the council has undertaken include the expansion of sports clubs rooms, provision of overlighting, playground equipment, regular grounds maintenance. And so largely this is a technical change. It will make no difference to people's day-to-day lived experience of these excellent areas, and a beautiful area it is too, but it will just bring it into council's control. A question that I have is, why now? What precipitated this this decision?
Mr. Smee?
Through you, Mayor, we have been dealing with a number of the users of the Oval Precinct, and as part of that, the question was asked in relation to Council's vision for the future, and then it was noted that Council doesn't actually own the facility, it's Crown, and so from a certainty perspective from the user groups that we have there wanting to invest in their facilities, there was a feeling that it would be far better if it was in Council ownership. And in relation to the foreshore, we've recently replaced the footbridge there, we're looking to do land care works there, and it became evident that we didn't actually have the tenure that we need to be able to do that. So it's one of good practice and good common sense that council does ensure that we've got appropriate tenure. And you'd also be aware we're doing the climate change work in relation to the snow adaptability study, and this also ties in with that.
Thank you. And I note that it also says at 5.2 on page 96 that council would already be depreciating the buildings and improvements on the lands as well as insuring the built structures. And I think that reference to the climate change adaptation strategy is a timely one because of this discussion that's starting to happen about with the impacts of anthropogenic climate change, what that does to the insurance of buildings and council-owned assets and council liability when it comes to these foreshore areas. So is there any commentary that we can hear about? So if I'm to understand the report correctly, we are currently depreciating the assets that we have improved. And, I mean, it's interesting that at 8.1 it says there are no significant risks associated with this proposal. I seek to unpack that statement. Are there significant risks when it comes to the insurance of land that may face storm surge and inundation and risks associated with climatic events?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, I guess at the moment we treat the land as if we are the owner and we treat the assets accordingly. So we don't differentiate between how we insure an asset that's on land we manage as opposed to land that we own. So in terms of how we're treating the assets, there's no difference in terms of the risk, but you're absolutely right, the snug adaptation study is going to shed more light in terms of the potential risk to those assets, but this particular proposal doesn't change the level of risk. As I say, the way we treat the asset is as if we are the landowner.
Thank you. And just to conclude my remarks, and I do appreciate all that, Snug, it's such a beautiful area and it's full of great people, and I think by bringing this under council control, we're able to care for it better, and I'm fully convinced of that. As it says in our key priority area is to deliver quality infrastructure and services and service provision that meets the needs of current and future requirements of residents and visitors. And so by bringing this under full council control, we can give it full council care, and I am sure that we will. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess Councillor Cordova has asked the question that's burning in my head because of the groundwater that comes up under the oval. I have visited the area and spoken with the footfall people down there, and they are quite concerned that the ground is so wet and that if we are going to be taking this over, I mean, that's my concern, are we buying into a climate change disaster? And in terms of the plan that Mr. Doole's done for us, this area is obviously very prone to flooding, both from high tides and from river flows, as well as groundwater coming up. And are we taking on a responsibility which the state government's not prepared to take on? Should we be actually moving away from this area because of the threat to the actual land and to the buildings?
Mr. Smith?
Through you, Mayor, it's a valid question. Certainly, at the moment, we have full management responsibility for the oval, and we have full responsibility for the threats to that oval that are posed by the rising groundwater or sea surge. Now, whether council divesting itself of that management responsibility will make any change in respect to the clubs there that we have worked with, supported over the years, I suspect that part of the SNAG adaptation studies is aimed to get a better appreciation of the length of time that oval can continue to be an oval. We simply don't know that at the moment. It could be 20 years, it could be 100. So if we have a better understanding of what we're facing, we can then work with the stakeholders in terms of planning how we prepare for what is coming in the future, and whether that's a retreat or whether it's other mitigation options, I'm not sure. But it is a valid question to ask, you know, is there an opportunity here to divest ourselves of what potentially might happen in the future? My answer would be that I think we're in this either way. I think our historical relationship with the Oval and its facilities and the clubs and organisations that we support there, I don't think it's something that council would simply be able to turn our back on and say to the state government, this is your problem.
Thank you. Mr. Smee, I've got Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Wass. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Thanks, Councillor Fox and Cordova, for the questions. I had some similar thoughts as well, noting that the adaptation project is currently underway. Do we not want to wait until the findings of that? But hearing Mr. Smee in regards to we're sort of in it either way, I'm just wondering thoughts on that.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, yes, again, a valid consideration. That would be a decision for council, but it certainly has merit.
Councillor Midgley, anything further?
No, thank you. It was just, noting that that's underway, and then I guess the response from Mr. Smee in regards to whether it's 20 to 100 years, noting again that we're in it, you know, either way, we're in there and we're working with clubs and things like that. I guess it's just something to consider in weighing up, and if any other one has any thoughts in regards to whether we should wait until the findings of the adaptation project will be worthwhile or not. I guess that's where I sit now, a bit indecisive.
Thank you. Mr. Smee, when did you say we might have the findings of the adaptation study?
Mayor, I think we're at least 6 months away from that. Perhaps even longer.
So, would there be any problems if we did, given this seems to have been around for quite a while, would there be any issues if we did defer this until such time as we had the study?
Absolutely not, Mayor. No, we can defer. We have tenure over the Oval and the Hall at the moment. I would say, though, that we should move to secure tenure over the foreshore.
Okay. Councillor Wass, you are next.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I do support the recommendation overall, and certainly the questions that Councillor Fox raised I share. In the event of water inundation where the land was not safe to walk on, for better term, and the infrastructure had to be removed. With council having the land under its own power, who would pay and how would we go about removing the present infrastructure?
That's just me.
Through you, Mayor. So our agreement with the Crown at the moment, if we were to relinquish the lease, council would be required to remove the infrastructure constructed thereon. Or if we have a sublease to, say, the Scout Group, and that lease requires them to remove it, you'd need to look at the terms of the lease. If we were the owner, again, it would come down to whether we have agreements with the various groups that have constructed assets on that land as to who would be responsible. But in the absence of no agreement, council would be.
Thank you. That does give me a little bit more comfort, because I do believe that we are going to have to retreat in many instances, and I think this is probably an area that might be where we retreat first up. Certainly since the Scout building was done, we know from our own climate change reviews that a lot of this land will be inundated. Can I just add that since 1967, the Oval Precinct has been known by this council as Snug Park. It became Snug Park in 1967 when multiple tents and hats were put on there following the 1967 bushfires.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Councillor, anybody? Gladewright?
Just a quick question. Is it a lease or a licence?
Mr. Smee.
Are you referring to the foreshore? Or the foreshore most likely would be a licence, but it would depend on what the Crown want. Their recent practice has been to issue a licence, and that depends as to whether there's exclusivity or not. So I would suggest that they're not going to give council an exclusive lease over the foreshore, therefore it would be a licence. But we would be open to either.
Further speakers? So, Mr. Smee, can I just clarify? You were suggesting that you'd still prefer that we get a lease or a licence for the foreshore lands, but we could quite happily defer the first part of the recommendation until such time as we have the adaptation study. Is that correct?
Correct, Mayor.
Do I have anybody who would be willing to move an amendment to that effect, given what the conversation around the table has been? So, Councillor Gladewright, you would like to move that we only do part two of the recommendation. Would that be... Is that acceptable to the mover and seconder? No? So would you like to move that as a separate amendment? And is there a seconder for that, I guess, is the question. No? Okay. That's dead in the water then. All right, let's go back to the substantive motion. So it's as moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova, to sum up.
Thank you, Mayor. I think we've had a productive discussion, and the issue, particularly around the issue of liability and insurance, and ultimately it is my view that knowledge is power, and the fact that we have done the work around our climate change adaptation policy and now the development of inundation modelling for the Snug Township means that as a council we are best positioned to help the community become more resilient and to adapt in the face of a changing climate. Ultimately, this is a hot potato that we need to grasp. We know about it, and it's our township, and we need to take responsibility for it. I don't think that there's much point in trying to divest responsibility to the state government. I don't think much change will be made in the 6 or 12 month interim now, and that's why I was keen to actually just process this now rather than wait. And the reason is that from a day-to-day perspective, there will be no change in us taking control, but when we have control, we'll be in a better position to show care for this area. In Kingborough, we stand by our community through thick and thin. We don't throw our hands up and say, state government's problem, not our responsibility. We take responsibility. And Snug may be significantly impacted in the future by sea level rise and by storm surge. And thanks to our adaptation strategy, the resultant mapping that we will have will inform us about development decisions and planning for potential adaptation measures. And in 6 or 12 months' time, when we have that information in front of us, we can look at this more closely. But I think right now we should acquire this foreshore lease and freehold title for the Oval and Hall. We should do it now because we need to meet our community's expectations and meet our own commitments to the community to deliver quality infrastructure and services. So I would like to move this now. I think this is good. This is the right thing to do. And a changing climate indeed is a hot potato, and we have to take responsibility for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I'm going to put the motion, moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Fox, as printed on the screen. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Show of hands is required. All those in favour? Is Councillors Cordova, Wass, Midgley, Fox, Street, Westwood and Reet? And against? Councillor Gladwright. The motion is carried. We turn now to page 99, Copping Refuse Site Joint Disposal Authority proposed rule changes with the recommendation on page 101.
So moved.
Moved by Councillor, I keep forgetting your name tonight, Councillor Street.
Hi.
Sorry about that. And seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I move this exceptionally exciting motion with respect to the change of rules for the Copping Refuse Site Joint Disposal Authority. As councillors are aware, but the community may not necessarily be aware, we're one of the member councils of the joint authority that runs the Copping Refuse Disposal Site. Every 5 years under its rules, the authority is required to review its own rules, and we have just recently been through a process to make a rule change, but that complete review has now occurred. The amendments to the rules are listed in the agenda, and I don't propose to go through them individually, but suffice to say that in most cases they are codifying things that are already happening administratively for the purposes of the efficiency of the authority and its proper functioning, and so it's good that those things are now occurring. Other than that, I leave the motion to my colleagues for discussion if there is any, except to say that it is a good thing that Kingborough are one of the member councils for the joint authority. It was excellent foresight of council at the time to join the joint authority when they did some years ago now, and I think we're seeing the fruits of that decision.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Question about, and I'm looking now on page 103, about Rule 69 and the remuneration that's now, this is an amendment to add in that representatives on the advice of the Secretary may approve the payment of remuneration for the role of Authority Chair. And then in the explanation there, it says that there's been an assumption that LGA doesn't allow payment to councillors or aldermen as representatives. However, Clarence City Council's appointed director to CCEL is a paid director's fee. Initially, this fee was paid to CCC, Clarence City Council, but Clarence City Council subsequently approved this to be paid to the director personally. My question is, it then says later on in the report that they're dropping the number of meetings from 10 minimum meetings per year to quarterly. Here's my question. Is it reasonable to reduce the minimum number of meetings at the same time as creating the option to start paying these board members or that specific board member, the authority chair? Isn't it true that if there were fewer meetings prescribed, there's an expectation of perhaps less work, which should mean less pay, not more, and less pay than zero would be... I'm not a math surgeon, but it would still be zero rather than adding in remuneration. So the question is around why should they get this now, and why did Clarence decide to start paying remuneration?
The General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Cordova, thank you for the question. I can't comment on the decision-making process at the City of Clarence, but what I can say to you is that the authority seeking to put the proposed rule changes up for advertising for community feedback and submissions in accordance with the requirements of the Local Government Act to test the assumptions that you've raised. And I think that you make some valid points, and it will be interesting to see during the advertising stage whether the community are accepting of those proposed changes or not.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor, to conclude my remarks, I think there are a lot of reasonable, very reasonable changes made within this, so I'm not going to be the obstacle in the way of it. And I note that Clarence has already approved it. Well, they would, wouldn't they? And I would say this, that people are doing it really tough at the moment, and the cost of living is going up. And in my experience, the more we pay people on boards to sit on boards, the more that those costs get passed along to the, ultimately to the consumers who are already facing high inflation and rising interest rates. I think we should be very cautious about this approach. Increasing board remuneration has never, in my experience, seemed to improve outcomes. So I recommend that we all tread carefully here and keep a close eye on it, and I would, I guess, bell the cat for the community consultation to just be aware of that rule 69 and what those potential remunerations might mean and whether we expect to get better service provision as a result of paying people more, or whether raising, you know, increasing salaries to board members is really the appropriate time to be doing this. So I'll leave it with that. Thank you.
Thank you. I can just on that. I mean, it's an independent chair that they are seeking, and I think that one of the challenges is always trying to get people who have the requisite skills and experience to fill those sorts of roles, and it can be very challenging to do that and ask someone to do it for no fee, given that there are a number of people that would perhaps like to. It's unfair to ask them to do it voluntarily. There are a lot of not-for-profits, for example, who struggle to get a good governance structure because they can't afford to pay people to sit on their boards. So it's a bit of a difficult one, and you know, they always say you get what you pay for, but you know, I think there is obviously the level of remuneration would be one thing. I'm not expecting that it would be exorbitant, but more and more it seems that there, particularly in the not-for-profit space, there is a move towards paying small honorariums towards board directors, because in that way it's thought that you do get a bit more of a buy-in in terms of there's an expectation that they will then do the work that is required of them, attend meetings, etc., etc., and bring a certain level of expertise. And also there are quite onerous requirements now in terms of company directors and the requirements that they must meet from a professional development point of view, and evidence of ongoing experience and membership of different organisations that all go into that melting pot as well. So it is certainly a very interesting area. Are there any further speakers? Councillor Watts.
Thank you, Mayor. I support the recommendation. I think it's long overdue. Certainly since Kingborough has been a part of the authority, we've led the charge and changed a lot of things, particularly in the financial structure when we first became involved. I think this just follows on. I'm not saying Council's done this, because the authority has done. And that's worth remembering too, that the authority and the board are totally two different organisations. And the authority are our council representatives, and the board is those that we pay a, what's the word, pay a, the stipend will do, it wasn't what I was going to use, but yes, that'll do, to carry out the work. Now, the authority does from time to time, particularly as you said, Mayor, with more responsibility, does find itself placed in a situation where one or other members need to carry out works, and certainly for anyone to want to do that and be a part of the authority need to be reimbursed. So I don't have an issue with that. The board get their allowance, and that's the end of those rises, if you like. The authority make the cap for the board.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Any further speakers? Councillor Street, did you want to sum up? No. Okay, I'll put the recommendation as printed on the screen. Moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. I'm going to call a short comfort break because we're already at 7:05. So if we can keep it to sort of under, I always say 6 minutes and it ends up being 10. So let's say keep it under 5 and maybe we'll be back in 8. How's that sound? Thank you.